How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Monday night, November 10th, 2008, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have Dave Meltzer here on the line. And Dave, how you doing?
I mean, you know, pretty good overall. I thought, watched a lot of TV tonight, for sure.
There was a lot of television to watch.
Oh, three straight hours, wow.
And actually, I'm on the West Coast, and I don't have the East Coast Spike feed, so I have not seen the Lesnar-Couture countdown yet. So how was it?
It was pretty good. They totally revamped the show. I think that we talked about that earlier. The original version was going to be... There were actually three different versions of it. And the first version they thought was too much on the split with Randy Couture and Zuffa. And it, you know, I heard it was like this great documentary of what happened and great television, but it really didn't make you want to see the fight. So then they had a second version, which was different. And then this is the third version, which actually was pretty good. You definitely come out wanting to see the fight. It was intriguing. I would say that when you watch it, you really come across with the idea that Randy's going to beat him. You know,
really?
Because they interviewed all these guys from Randy's camp, and they were real confident, and they only really interviewed like Brock's strength coach as opposed to fighters. I mean, they had Sean Sherk, you know, getting a few words in, but, you know, he doesn't really train with Brock. Brock's got his buddies that train in this big shed in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota. I mean, you know, Brock's an interesting person, and it was real, you know, he basically said that he's got, like, he doesn't want to train in the gym because there's people in the gym that he doesn't like, so he brings his friends up to this place in the middle of nowhere, and they're all his friends, and they're the only people he picks, and, you know, and they're training to get ready for Randy Couture, and, that was, he made it pretty clear he doesn't like human beings very much.
Well,
except for a few.
Sure. Well, I mean, normally when they do these, they try to play it up like the guy that they expect to win is going to lose. Now, when you were watching this, did you get that impression?
I got the impression that, which is funny because the original, my feeling, just based on the fact that I was interviewed for the show, and then I'm not on the show, but how the interview was going and everything, and, you know, not so much from what I was saying, but certainly the direction of what the producers were going was not going to make Randy Couture a babyface. It wasn't like it was going to make him a heel, but it wasn't going to make him a babyface. Now, when you watch this, Randy's like the ultimate babyface, and Brock is just simply the monster heel. I mean, this is very much, you know, how would I compare it? Bruno Sammartino against, you know, some, you know, Beppo Mongol or something like that. That's a real dated term, but it's like your old babyface who's been around forever, and this is the new monster heel that the Grand Wizard or Lou Albano or something brought in, and he's really, really scary. And, you know, they even showed, you know, another interesting thing about the special is that obviously the, and I had kind of heard rumors about this, the relations between WWE and UFC must not be as strong as they were months ago, because they had pro wrestling footage on this piece, and it was all from the Inoki Gnome Federation of a Lesnar-Kurt Angle match from, you know, it was actually Brock's last professional wrestling match from 2007, when Angle beat him for the IWGP, you know, for that IWGP, you know, phony championship or whatever it was. And that was it, you know, when they talked about the wrestling, which they didn't really go into that much. But, you know, that was the footage. And, you know, it's actually some pretty wild footage in that match.
Must have taken a gander at some of the Brock Lesnar buy rate numbers and comparisons.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, Heath Herring and Lesnar probably beat SummerSlam.
They killed SummerSlam.
SummerSlam was what, 437?
On a North American basis, they were probably right at double SummerSlam.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I would guess that's the answer.
That's probably your answer then, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, when you watched this and you saw the footage of each man training and listened to both sides, and obviously they're trying to steer the viewer in one direction, but having watched it all and made your own determination, any changes to your prediction as to who's going to win?
No. I just think, I really sense just from everything that Brock is clearly an underdog, even though he's the betting favorite. You know, and all the money, you know, I don't say all, but the vast majority of the money's coming in on him. I think people just see how big he is, but I just see him as just too inexperienced. But you never know. I mean, I can envision, you know, him just beating him with wrestling. I can certainly envision it. He's probably going to be the better wrestler, but just all around fighting, I just see Randy being too experienced. I mean, it keeps coming back to me, this idea that, you know, this is a sport. It's not a street fight. And in this sport, I mean, what sport did you know? I don't care if it's gymnastics. I don't care if it's, you know, the NFL. I don't care if it's tennis. You cannot take a guy, you know, even, you know, let's even say he's a year past his prime, you know, and or, you know, or, I don't know. Which is pretty hard to say for a guy's 45. You would say he's 30, you know, 15 years past his prime. But Randy, you know, Randy looked awfully good last year. But let's just say you got a guy like that, you know, whether it's in any of these sports, and he's a little bit, let's just say he's a little bit past his prime, but he's kept in shape and he's still very competitive. And you put him, and you take this, another guy who is an absolutely phenomenal athlete, okay, but has never done the sport, you know, has done the sport for 2 years. And, you know, even though he might be good at another sport, I mean, it's like taking a, you know, the world, you know, one of those world's fastest men guys who never played in the NFL and have him train for 2 years in football. Are they going to be a better wide receiver than a 45-year-old guy who knows how to play wide receiver? They're not. I mean, now maybe in 4 or 5 years, Brock, you know, I mean, I think 2 years from now, Brock beats him and beats him handily. But I don't think he's going to beat him this time. But again, you know, I mean, anything can happen. You watch that Uriah Faber Mike Brown finish, and I mean, the one thing with that finish is that you got to realize is that there are so many things that can happen in a fight. I mean, you know, Brock could just knee him in the head when Randy shoots. Randy could knee Brock in the head when Brock shoots. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, fluke things can happen either way.
Sure. Yeah.
The odds are that when it comes to quote a fluke, if that's the word, a fluke finish, it would probably go in Randy's favor because he's going to see more and know more when that opening shows up. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Randy might be open for a second and Brock will hit him in the face. Liddell hit him in the face, knocked him out. And Brock's a big guy who can hit hard. So, you know, anything can happen. But
I just kind of look at it like I don't think there's much of a chance of Randy submitting Brock. I suppose it can happen, but I would think that may be the least likely scenario.
I don't see Brock submitting Randy either.
Well, no, that's probably not going to happen.
Not with a submission hold, anyway. I mean, submitting him from ground and pound, like, you know, if he gets on top and just pounds his face and breaks his eye or something, you know,
sure.
that easily could happen.
But I mean, as far as like a joint or a leg lock or something like that, I don't see Randy beating Brock in that manner, or vice versa, really. But on the feet, I expect Randy to be better on the feet by a wide margin.
There's, you know, he might embarrass him on his feet for all we know, because
I watch
Brock, you know, do his stand up, and he's you know, I mean, he's just a novice stand up. I mean, he's stiff and his movement isn't good, and Randy's movement is really good. And I mean, the key is if Randy can keep the fight on his feet at a boxing distance, he's going to do real well. And if they're in a clinch, you know, Randy may do well in that. Although you don't know. I mean, you're if you've got two guys in a clinch and you got one guy who's, you know, 275 and one guy who's 225, that makes up for a lot of the technical superiority that Couture would have in that position. And Brock can throw knees and Brock can punch close as well. You know, when you don't have the movement would be Randy's friend, and Brock's going to obviously be out there trying to cut down that movement, and he's quick enough where he can possibly do that. Brock's goal is going to be to take him down, and I think if he gets him close, you know, he can take him down. You know, perhaps Randy can take Brock down. You know, a key would be the conditioning, and that's a real interesting game, because Brock's very well conditioned for a big guy, and Randy's got to push around more weight. So that looks like an advantage for Brock. But Randy knows what he's doing, and he won't panic, and that's a big, you know, drop. So that's an advantage for Randy. I don't know who's going to, like, in the fourth round. I mean, when Randy goes in those, and, you know, even with Sylvia and with, you know, it was in the Sylvia fight, I mean, he was totally gassed at round three. The only thing was is that Sylvia was more gassed. Brock wasn't gassed in round three against Herring, but, you know, he wasn't tested either. So, it's, you know, it's very
well,
intriguing
Randy
fight.
Wasn't really tested in the Sylvia fight either, and he was tired.
He got tired, though.
That's the
point. You know
point.
What I mean?
He
because
got,
he was trying to, you know, hold down that big guy.
Yeah,
and
he got
anything,
very
Brock's
tired.
Brock's retirement quicker than Sylvia because Brock knows how to wrestle, and Brock's bigger and stronger.
He got tired in that.
Not taller, but physically just broader.
He got very tired in that third round, and that was in a fight that he was never in danger for any moment, really. There was always the danger of a punch coming from nowhere, but, I mean, there was never a period where you thought, oh, Randy's about to lose here. And, you know, I don't see this fight staying on its feet for five rounds. I see it going to the ground. I really don't see Randy holding Brock down. I think when it goes to the ground, you mentioned the experience of being a fighter for X number of years, but if it goes to the ground, I think it's largely going to be a wrestling match, and I think it's going to be a wrestling match against with a 225-pounder against a 285-pounder, and I see Brock winning that wrestling match. And I really see this as likely a, unless there's a ground and pound finish or something like that, I see a five-round decision, and I see Brock winning.
Well, it could be. If it goes to a wrestling match and it goes five rounds, I can't see in a wrestling match where Randy's going to be in better shape than Brock in round four, because that's really what Brock's going to want, you know, unless, you know, he's got Brock on his back. I don't see that, you know, I see Randy on his back more than Brock, you know, if we're going to do a wrestling match.
I would say that's a definite.
Maybe on his stomach, even.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know. Although, you know, well, Randy probably turned to his back. He's not, you know, because, you know, even though Brock's not going to probably choke him out, but, you know, it'll be an electric thing, that's for sure.
You know what's funny is because Randy Couture is involved, I think that Randy taking him down and out wrestling him and dominating him from the top for five rounds is extremely unlikely, but because it's Randy Couture, if that actually happened, I would be like, well, it's Randy Couture. There you go.
It's Randy Couture. But, you know, the other thing is that if it turns into a five-round wrestling match and Randy Couture is winning or even losing, it's still gonna be kind of a legendary fight anyway. Because look at Randy and Tito Ortiz. If any two guys had done that fight except for those two, you know, I mean, it would be, you know, a forgettable fight, and people would be talking about how boring it was and this and that. And that's, you know, a fight that everyone remembers, and they don't remember it as a boring fight, let alone, you know, Randy and Tim Sylvia, which, you know, if you actually look at the action, it wasn't very action-filled. And, you know, for atmosphere and crowd reactions, you know, that was as good as any fight in UFC history. I mean, you know, as far as just emotion and everything. I mean, Randy brings out the emotion in the fans, and Brock will too, you know. And,
yes, he will.
As the, you know, and it's very clear, you know, that they, when they did this special, I mean, again, I think, you know, the original special, Brock, you know, Randy Couture was not a baby face. It was just Randy Couture, and this is what he is. This is as good and this is as bad. When you watch this special, Randy Couture is 100% babyface, and Brock Lesnar is a heel, you know. I mean, not a over-the-top heel, but definitely the heel.
So for those of you, I presume at some point it's going to replay. If all else fails, it'll probably replay right before the actual pay-per-view.
Yeah,
so
it's replaying Thursday at midnight. And it'll replay on DirecTV Channel 101. Right before the weigh-ins, which will air live on DirecTV 101. And it will air also, I don't know exactly when, but I'm sure it'll air on Saturday at some point, you know, right before the show starts on the West Coast.
Let's talk a little bit about the Raw show from the UK. It was a very wrestling-heavy show, including a near 25-minute match with Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho for free, and you know, I kind of want to ask you about that match, because when I watched it, I mean, it was, by no means was it a bad match, but given 20 minutes with Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, I was kind of let down.
Yeah, especially because you kind of think about that going in. It didn't compare to some of their other matches. I think part of it was they went too quickly with the last man standing.
Yeah.
And a lot of those, you know, usually with the last man standing, when you've got the knockdowns, you want those knockdowns to look like they're the finish, and then the guy gets up and it's really dramatic. And in this one, so many of them, I was just going in my head like, this isn't going to be the finish.
Did you see Shawn Michaels?
Kind of broke some momentum and everything. But, you know, it was still a good match.
What did you think of Michaels pulling an Undertaker and getting up at about an 11 and making the ref look like a total fool?
Yeah, I know.
Jesus. It was a good match, and Chris Jericho won when JBL interfered and whacked Shawn with a chair, which sets up a Survivor Series multiple man match, which is going to be Team Shawn Michaels of Michaels, Ray, Crime Time, and Great Khali against JBL, Miz, Morrison, MVP, and Kane, which sounds horrible. And
hey, it won't be horrible. That's the best use of Great Khali is to be in that kind of a tag match where he's going to come in, you know, very, very limited. You know, I mean, you got Shawn and Ray on one team, you know, it'll be okay.
Yeah, JBL and Morrison on the other team. Or not JBL, Morrison. Well, I guess you've got Morrison on the other team.
Morrison and MVP Miz.
MVP,
right.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, the workers are going to carry the match. It'll be fine.
Well, I will take your word for it. But so, yeah, that was the main event of the show there. And yeah, it was. There was something with the UK fans. When Big Dave first came out and he was booed, I will give him a pass this week because they were in the UK and it was a very weird crowd. But when I first heard those boos, I thought, wow, he really was such a failure last week that these people don't like him anymore.
I don't know. I
we'll have to wait till next week.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see the people like react so much to like one match, even though. You know.
One match. This was a series of failures.
Well, yeah, I know he lost, but you know, an eight day title reign is for a babyface. To me, it's not necessary. It's not really a good idea.
No.
You know, because it really makes them look like a failure. I mean, the thing to me was they had this freaking awesome video of John Cena before Jericho came out, and they play this video, and then everyone boos. I was just thinking, like, you know, they have done such a great job. You know, it's some of the best stuff they've done in years as far as building up a guy coming in and a guy's return and things like that. And I mean, every one of them, you just sit there and just go, oh man, I like this guy. He works so hard. I don't know what it is about John Cena, but you know, there is a large fan base that is just bound and determined they're not going to cheer this guy. I really anticipate him getting cheered like crazy because it is in Boston, but you know, I think like a month later, it's going to be right back to how it used to be.
Oh, yeah, it'll be right back. But think of all those times that Hulk Hogan appeared on the big screen before coming out, and he got booed unmercifully, and then when he actually came out, they went nuts for him.
True. But John Cena, for whatever reason, he always gets booed, or usually gets booed when they show him on the big screen, but he also would get booed in person. You know, I mean, there's something about Cena that people, like, really get off on booing him, whereas with Hogan, it was, I've seen periods, you know, I mean, when Hogan worked with Ric Flair in the Wrong Cities, and, you know, there's times where people booed him when he was a babyface, you know, when people got tired of him at the end. But with Cena, it's, it's more widespread, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it was a weird crowd, as noted, because Santino came out, and he got cheered, and they chanted his name for at least until Regal came out. And even Regal, when Regal won the title in 30 seconds with the running knee, I mean, it really, I expected a bigger ovation. I expected them to be into him more after the speech that he gave. But, I mean, they were into him. But
it was good. It was good. But,
something was missing.
You know, you think of like a UK crowd, and they're just so over the top. And this crowd was not as over. Yeah, wasn't that over the top. I think maybe that match just being so short. You know, it ended before people were ready for it to end. That's for sure.
Yeah, I thought that was one time where it should have been a more competitive match, and I also thought when he first came out that I will bet that 95% of this crowd figures it's his hometown, so he's going to be humiliated, and then they were shocked when he actually won.
So was I. Mean, I was shocked hearing about it.
I predicted it.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Regal, because with Regal now, you know, the thing with Morella was that they never had confidence in him as a wrestler. If you ever watched, you know, his matches, and this was another example of it, they had plenty of confidence in him doing promos, but they would always do one-minute matches on television.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it kind of limited the Intercontinental title, even though I think that, you know, in his own way, he was an entertaining Intercontinental champion, but he was not a wrestling Intercontinental champion, and maybe, you know, one of the things, because I really felt watching Stephanie McMahon, you know, in her promo at the onset of the show, that in there, that they're mentally going like, okay, you know, clean slate, we're going to start new programs, we're going to kind of start anew. You know, it's one of those kind of house cleaning periods that they're going through with all the cuts. And you know, one of those things is, I think maybe that, you know, someone goes, hey, let's get, you know, a wrestler, you know, a wrestler to hold the Intercontinental title. And so they came up with, you know, Regal in England as a place to win it. It's kind of weird though, because it's like he came out, he did a complete babyface interview. And then I get this feeling, you know, I don't think he's turned, but I guess
it was a babyface promo, but it was the kind of promo that everybody cheered him. But if you were in America and you heard that promo, you would boo him as he put over, for example, the Queen and, and that. It sort of, I think it's the kind of thing where if you replay it in the U.S., they would hate him for it.
Yeah. Well, he'll be out in Atlanta next week and I'm sure he'll get booed.
Yeah. We had Mike Knox debuting, beating D'Lo Brown, which was a nothing match, but it put him over as a big, scary man with a big beard.
I like his look.
Yeah, he is. It's a very unique look, and he's competent in the ring, so I'm totally fine with this.
Yeah, I hope that they, like, I always say this whenever it's a new guy, because I just want to see, you know, new guys get a chance. And I always feel that, like, you know, when a new guy is starting to get momentum, that's when they start cutting their legs off. And I just hope, you know, because, I mean, like, he's a big guy, and you know, like, they love to push big guys. But, like, you know, I just keep thinking of, like, you know, Snitsky is kind of like in that position where it's kind of like the guy who you know they're going to push, but they don't mean it, and they don't ever give him the promo time and things like that. And I hope that he does better, you know, simply because he's so much better than, you know, Snitsky's weakness was just that he just wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, he's improved a lot. He's certainly competent and aggressive and, just like to see him do well.
We had the Jericho segment where he did the promo vowing to destroy Cena and talked about destroying Shawn Michaels and how he beat Batista, who had beaten Cena at SummerSlam. It was a well-put-together promo, and it was good. We had Kane versus Rey, which, thank God, this is the end. And
yeah, that's what I didn't mind this match, even though I actually thought it was one of the worst matches the two had.
It was not very good.
Yeah, you know, some missed spots, just bad timing. But it wasn't too bad, because I was thinking, like, at least hopefully Rey and Kane are going to get new feuds. Although Kane's next feud sounded like it might be with Shane McMahon
or the Great Khali.
Oh God, I remember those matches.
Yeah. Then we had the burial again of Manu and Cody Rhodes, who at least stood up to Orton initially, but then Cody came out and took Orton's place in the match with Batista, and he was killed, and then Batista killed Manu, and then Orton looked at them both like, you two are as big a failures as Dave, and he walked out, and that was that.
Yeah. I just thought that Manu getting just taken apart, you know, after the match was, you know, it's like, oh boy.
Yeah, this was.
I mean, I guess the idea is that they're going to break him down and then Randy's going to bring him back up.
Sure.
But to me, I mean, I've seen this tried like a zillion times in wrestling, you know, where you give a guy this gimmick, you know, where he's a loser, you know, kind of with MVP as well. And, you know, they've done it with many, many people. And usually what happens is you know, the idea is like, we're giving you this gimmick and then we're going to turn it around, you know. It almost never works when you turn around, because people have already decided that, okay, you're a loser.
Well, I'm not totally down on this yet, and that is because at the very least, Cody had a somewhat competitive match with Dave before being squashed. It wasn't like a Colin Delaney performance or anything like that. I think they're trying to put over that these guys are good. They're not at Randy Orton's level yet. And Randy Orton is going to try and bring them up to his level, which is better than these guys are worse than everybody else on the roster, and Randy's going to take them under his wing.
Yeah.
Then we add Mickey and Beth, which, talk about a bad night. I thought this was really bad.
Yeah, they were way off.
Oh, yeah. So, not much to mention there. And then the long last man standing match with, as noted, Sean winning, and just something missing. I don't know what it was, but just something missing from that one.
Yeah.
And as far as other news from today, we had, of course, more firings. Elijah Burke finally got axed. as well as Lena Yada and Ken Doan. So I guess no surprises there. They're doing house cleaning. There's perhaps more to come. I hate saying that because I don't want to worry people or get rumors started.
Hey,
but
you're not saying anything. The people who are scared are going to be scared whether you say it or not.
Exactly.
They can read the writing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were a lot of guys cut in a short period of time, and, you know, that's kind of how they do their MO. They just kind of decide, you know what, we're not using any of these guys, let's cut them loose. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, if you're Ryan Braddock, you know, I'm sure you're like, this isn't the week to buy a car.
Now, I'm looking at the Orlando SmackDown spoilers, and looks like we've got the main event.
Impact.
What was that?
Orlando Impact spoilers.
Yep. What did I say? SmackDown.
You said SmackDown. Screwed up.
So Main Event Mafia winning a lot of matches, and just looking at the Main Event Mafia without Sting destroyed Christian. Kurt Angle said they heard a rumor he was jumping back to WWE and said they were giving him a going away party. Have these people lost their minds?
Yeah, I think they pretty much are sure that he's leaving now because he wouldn't sign a new contract. So they. You know, the deal was just like they got caught flat-footed on Gail Kim, and they're bound and determined not to. And I guess that they're
writing him off until he resigns or leaves.
What can I say? I mean, hey, you know, they talk about WWE like it's the major leagues every week anyway. So why not?
God,
I heard about it. I just thought it was funny. You know, I mean, if they hadn't done it so much, I would think it's really stupid, but. You know, it's like nothing.
Well,
they're
it's
doing.
Pretty stupid. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but it's nothing that they're not doing every week.
No, that's true. I don't know. I was writing the Turning Point report, and I just sit there and I think, you know, I realize that Death of WCW wasn't like a New York Times bestseller or anything like that, but a lot of people bought it, and did anyone read it?
Hello? Yeah, I don't think that they did.
I see this in this. It's like Scott Hall in the crowd working the guys getting angry about it, the backstage in disarray, this wackiness with WWE. It amazes me.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember a story where I don't know if this ever happened, but Kevin Nash, you know, told a friend of mine the story and said that it did happen, so. Maybe probably something close to this happened, you know. This was a couple months back, and you know there was some like really bad booking and Kevin Nash. You know, it didn't involve Kevin Nash, so it's not like he went home like he did that one day. But you know, and he just goes, Jeff, you know, we lived through WCW. Why are we doing it again?
it's a great question.
Yes, it is.
So anyway, that was the and you know, it's even more than that. Now that I'm really getting on this subject here, I mean, it's bad enough that they're repeating all of this stuff that they did in WCW, but I mean, to hire like the same guys, the guys that were writing when it went down, the guys that were doing production when it went down, the wrestlers who were involved when it went down, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it amazes me.
Yeah.
It's like hiring the people that built the Titanic to build a new boat.
Maybe
you would never do
they
that.
Got experience in boat building.
Yeah, experience in a big failure.
Well, you know, I mean, that boat was, you know, a big hit until it crashed.
Sure.
You know.
So was WCW.
I know.
And then it crashed.
That's the whole thing. I mean, like this total NWO copy. I just think it was. Did you see the thing in the? I think it was the Long Island Press.
Oh, and when Angle is explaining how this is all going to turn out?
What?
When Angle is explaining how this is all going to turn out and why the NWO didn't work?
That was one of the funniest articles I've read because the guy, you know, because Kurt's doing his usual stuff, and this guy, I think Josh Stewart, is clearly completely wrestling savvy. And he's, like, writing that, you know, Kurt, you know, is just, you know, completely, you know, not crazy, but you just can't believe anything he says. And he's kind of writing it, like, tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, this is what he says. And, and Kurt's like going like, you know, we're going to be just like the NWO. And the guy goes to Kurt, you do realize that the NWO put the company out of business. And then Kurt goes, well, that's because they never went to any house shows.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's actually.
Yeah, the best part was Kurt's talking about why the NWO failed. And here's a guy that didn't start watching wrestling until 1999, first off. Maybe he went back and watched tapes. Who knows? But he's explaining that the NWO never went to house shows, and I'm sitting there thinking, you just did a tour of California, and you were the only guy in that entire crew that was on that house show.
Yep.
It's like he
yeah, I know, he should at least know that. And I mean, the other thing was with the NWO is, like, you know, they did go to, you know, I mean, there's 50 of them, so plenty of them went to house shows.
It was easier back then, but yes.
I mean, Hogan didn't go to, you know, didn't do a full schedule of house shows, but, you know, I mean, plenty of those guys were there.
No, and the very reason that the NWO actually failed is the very reason that this Main Event Mafia deal is not working, and why the babyfaces look like such fools, and why the heels were cheered in half the matches. More than half. I think 3 of the 4 they were cheered.
Yeah.
In fact, in the Booker T match, there was even, I think, what happened in that match? Something happened. Oh, Booker did the spin-a-rooney and everybody cheered. So they went 4 for 4.
Yeah.
But let's go to some of the questions here.
All right.
As we're ranting. This person says, do you think the NWA missed the boat by not making Luger champion in 88? Do you think Luger would have drawn as champion if he'd won the belt at Starrcade 1988, considering that the Flair-Steamboat feud in early 89 was a box office disappointment?
Let's go back. Let's see. He means 89, because Flair-Steamboat was 89, and then Luger was a heel, and he was wrestling Steamboat, and then Flair was wrestling Terry Funk. Or if you mean Starrcade 88, that was before. Oh, maybe he's just saying before Flair Steamboat.
Yeah, before.
Luger winning at that point. To me, you know, Luger was cooling off by December. Business was down. I mean, Luger and Flair in I think like July and August of 88 was big. You know, doing very good business at a time when generally speaking, Crockett had hit the wall and things were bad. And then they did that match in Baltimore with Luger and Flair with that blood finish. It was absolutely like this most horrible finish, because Luger, you know, had the blade and they were going to stop the match on blood, and he hardly bled at all. He's Flair in the torture rack. He's, you know, he's barely bleeding, and they stopped the match on blood, and it just didn't work. Yet, you know, who's to say, right? It's like, the finish, people hated the finish, and then everywhere they went with Flair and Luger after that, I would say everywhere, you know, but as a general rule, they drew their best houses in you know, a year or 2 years. I mean, big, you know, very good business for Flair and Luger at that time. Luger was hot. Put the title on him, I don't know. You know, I mean, the problem with Luger and even with Sting was when they put the title on, they really couldn't do the promos. God, if this Sting... Too bad this Sting wasn't around then, with that athletic ability he had then and the promos he can do now, he might have done pretty well.
Yeah.
But his promos were so weak that, you know, they never really drew that big as champions. And Luger, you know, Luger never fully connected as a babyface. You know, I mean, he was certainly over at times, you know, and drew money at times. You know, they'll always do that thing where they go, oh, Lex Luger never drew a dime, but that's simply not true. Lex Luger drew... You know, when he did that babyface turn, and you know, during that, you know, at that period of time, he did draw well. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what would happen then if they'd done it. I think that, you know, he could have been champion for a little while, and then they might have gone back to Flair, and you know, who knows? I just remember by Christmas, which was the Starrcade match, the Luger Flair thing had kind of run its course, and there was a mentality. I just remember at the time. You know, when the summer and everything, where I thought, you know, Luger winning the title may not be such a bad idea. But I know by December, I know that, you know, my mentality was that, okay, you know, they didn't do it, and there's something missing here, and business is now back down, and I don't think the people are just... I didn't think that Luger in December should have won. I mean, in that, I just remember in that match, the Starrcade match in 88, you know, it was just a question of, you know, I mean, you know, Luger was put in there for Flair to win. And part of it also was that Jim Herd, who took over, and the Turner people were, at that point, pretty enamored with Flair. And so they wanted him as champion, you know, which is one of the reasons, which is, you know, that Dusty ended up getting the boot, because Dusty didn't want him as champion. And so that kind of, those forces kind of collided.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, let's see. Just wanted to know if there's been any talk of Bob Sapp going to WWE. He's almost done as a draw in Japan, and I can't see where else he'd go. I know that Bobby Lashley push was originally designed for him, so it was a matter of him coming to terms on money. I don't think there's anything to Bob Sapp going to WWE right now at all. I've heard, like, not even a peep. And then I would think that I would know something like that. I'm not sure, you know.
I think the thing is, if there are offers in Japan that start to dry up, which they're inevitably going to do,
His time in Japan is certainly he's still making good money, but now he could make more money in WWE than he could in Japan, which for a long time wasn't the case.
And his asking price will be lower.
I think that they, in their minds, probably, I think that they probably figured that they've got Ezekiel Jackson, who's kind of looks like Bob Sapp.
He does.
And obviously is going to come at a much cheaper price. And, you know, they've taught him their own way, and he doesn't have, he'd be easier to contain, and he can't, like, get mad and go back to Japan. So I think that they, in their mind, you know, why do they need Bob Sapp when they're going to develop their own Bob Sapp? You know, even though he's not quite as big, you know, but, you know, maybe if Bob Sapp went there, he wouldn't be quite as big either.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more each. This person says, what do you guys think of Rey Buchanan and Ultimo Guerrero as a tag team? Well, they're awesome, in fact.
Yeah, they're very good. I'm surprised TNA didn't bring them back because they did well when they were there, though, you know.
That's actually the other question. You think they could be stars in TNA, ROH, or NWA?
You know, there's style difference. NWA, they do use luchadors, but they're using their own luchadors.
You know, not
the CMLL guys, and they're kind of going against CMLL because of NWA Mexico. So I guess they politically, NWA probably wouldn't work. They could go to TNA because TNA and CMLL have the relationship. I'm actually surprised TNA didn't use them more. Especially, they were in Los Angeles. You know, they didn't use them, which, you know, I don't know. I don't know that they would have drawn that much, many extra people, but, you know, you could have used them. And what was the other place?
ROH.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't see that one happening at all.
They have a different style, but when guys are as good workers as those two guys, I mean, they'll work your style. Probably without a whole hell of a lot of time learning it. They're so damn good.
Yeah, the other thing on them too is that fan base will accept them as stars, or at least decent stars coming in, whereas, you know, a TNA fan base, it's a little bit harder, you know, just because, you know, the ROH fan base is generally more accepting of foreign stars and, you know, kind of would respect, you know, like, even if they didn't really know them, they would kind of know that they're somebody.
I got to read one more here. Can you guys please provide an accurate story as to why Teddy Hart is not in WWE? Aside from sharing a last name with Hitman, he's an amazing high flyer. I heard he had some attitude issues and whatnot.
Yes, he had. It wasn't really attitude as much as that.
He's been fired three times for being Teddy Hart.
I mean, he's his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question the guy's he's talented and he's charismatic too.
Yeah.
The first time they signed him, he was 19 years old and they had to get rid of him. And then there were a couple other times, you know, and the thing was, is like, they would tell him, you know, I mean, he didn't listen. That was what his problem was.
He did
they
what he wanted
him, you know,
to
okay,
do.
In this match, we don't want you to do a moonsault. So then he would do two moonsaults.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just know like from AAA, you know, he was going crazy. They were going crazy in AAA because, you know, they were heels in the Foreign Legion, Teddy and Jack Evans. And Jack Evans is, you know, got some residual heat because of Teddy, but Jack Evans, you know, does a pretty good job there. And Teddy, you know, I mean, I just remember people telling me, like, you know, Teddy's, you know, like a heel, and he goes to the ring and he starts, you know, high-fiving all the fans and he goes to the ring. And it's like we tell him not to do it and he still does it. They didn't fire him over it, but it's like that stuff gets heat. And like, in AAA where it's more lax and everything like that, you know, you can do it and they won't fire you. WWE, you know, you do that two or three times, you're gone.
Out of there.
You know, because they want soldiers. They don't want people who are, you know, going to, you know. I mean, you're told something, you're supposed to listen, and he, it doesn't sink in. I have, you know, Teddy Hart is so, it's so weird to me because, you know, he's Brett's nephew, and he comes from that family. And you would think that, you know, everyone else in that family pretty much, you know, they listen. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
It's like, and he's got more talent than all of them. You know, I mean, he's got more talent than Natalya. He's got more talent than Harry. And you know, he should be the one who, you know, because Harry's got the size. I mean, they should have been a tag team, and they should have gotten the push that DiBiase and Cody Rhodes got, and they could have been stars. And you know, Teddy just didn't listen. That's all there was to it.
All right, last one. Go ahead.
Do you think Vince will ever go back to brand-specific pay-per-views? No. I think that you know, the buy rates went up when they stopped. Not greatly, but they did go up. And I just don't. I put it this way. I see now, if they went to a SmackDown brand pay-per-view now, I think it would do horrible business.
Yeah.
It would scare them to death to where, you know, there would only be one, and then they would go back to, you know, all the brands. It makes, you know what, it makes for better shows anyway. I mean, there's the positives and the negatives, but I think the three brand stuff, you know, it just works better. I think it makes for a more entertaining show. It's hard because if you're a middle guy, you don't get as much chance to shine as if on a brand-specific pay-per-view, you would get more time and you would get, you know, more, you know, like a Cody Rhodes or those guys. They, you know, on a brand-specific show, they'd probably be on every show, and on this one, they're on every couple of shows. Whereas, you get your Shawn and Triple H and all them are going to be on. Undertaker is going to be on pretty much every show. But, you know, again, especially with pay-per-view business not being that strong, I can't, you know, I don't say never, but I don't see it. I don't see brand-specific pay-per-views anymore.
And you know, one more thing is when they had those brand-specific pay-per-views, you know, one of the benefits is when you go every other month, it allows you time to stretch out storylines. So, you know, what used to be rushed in 4 weeks can be stretched out to 8 weeks, and usually that's a positive, but I remember that there were some two-month periods on SmackDown where I'd watch that show and go, I've watched this same damn show three times in a row now, and nothing has changed, and it started to really drag.
Yeah, and the other thing is when they say it's brand-specific, they can't keep anything brand-specific anyway. So why even say it?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, they would just go in there and go, God, we got 2 weeks of a lineup, let's put, you know, John Cena on the SmackDown show.
Well, everybody, that's going to do it for today. We're going to be back on Wednesday night with our final show before Vegas. Dave and I are going to be down there for the weekend, so we'll have a whole bunch of stuff, hopefully, from Las Vegas, a whole bunch of audio updates if I can get all that worked out. So that should be a fun time. Friday, we'll do some stuff after the weigh-ins, maybe, and, of course, Saturday after the pay-per-view, some notes also from the press conference. It'll be a good time. So that's going to be the lineup for the weekend, and, of course, Wednesday, I should announce, I don't think we've even announced this yet, but Wednesday we are, I believe we're going to be having Gina Carano on the show.
Yeah, we're going to do, Gina Carano will be on Wednesday, yeah.
That's right. So
yeah,
we'll,
and she'll be non-committal.
That's...
You know what, anyone with her? I have no clue where she's going because there's nowhere to go.
No, this will be a fun show because...
I mean, if she's not going to Affliction and she's not going to UFC... And, you know, I guess you could go to Strikeforce, but, you know, they don't, you know, Strikeforce doesn't really, I don't know. I mean, if Strikeforce got an NBC special, you know, then...
Then they could use her.
Oh, well, then they would use her. But
yeah.
If they're just going to run, like, these house shows, you know, I don't know if they would do... And it'd be such a waste if that match with Gina Carano and Chris Cyborg ended up just being like on a house show in San Jose.
That than never.
What?
Better that than never.
Yeah, but it would be sad.
It would be very sad.
You know, that ends up on HDNet where, you know, I mean, nobody has access to it.
At the very least, to put it on the last Affliction pay-per-view.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do Affliction.
Yeah,
I know. Well, the next Affliction pay-per-view might be the last one.
Well, yeah. So we'll talk to her about all of that on Wednesday, and tomorrow we'll be joined by former heartthrob Romeo Roselli.
That'll be
a wacky time. And then, of course, Thursday, Lance Storm.
I was just thinking about him.
About Romeo?
This afternoon when I was at the hospital, and I suddenly started thinking about all of these guys, and Romeo Roselli came to mind of these guys who... We would watch and go, because I was thinking, because in Florida Championship Wrestling, this is what I was thinking about, because I just watched Florida Championship Wrestling. And there's nobody in Florida Championship Wrestling where I just go, oh man, this is so entertaining. I just enjoy this guy. It's just a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, like, you know, in OVW, you know.
There were so many great
characters.
And
I started thinking about Miz and, Morrison and Joey Mercury with Melina, the original Eminem, and how great they were.
Yep.
And then the Heartthrobs and how great they were with, what was the guy's name? Morris?
Morris. Remember when they went to the mall?
Oh my God. That was awesome. So anyway, and Chad. Remember Chad?
Chad! I do remember Chad.
Everyone forgets him. And he went to WWE and was just terrible. And in OVW, he was great.
Yes.
But, so I was thinking about the heartthrobs and how we would just sit there and go, like, you know, they're not ready, they're not ready. And one day we get the thing, I get like an email before TV. They're here, and they're changing their names, and they're not bringing in Morris.
Oh, yeah. Just kill the entire gimmick.
They're not allowed to do their dance.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, oh, boy, this is going to be real bad.
God.
And it was.
And it was.
They were clearly not ready for that.
No.
And it's like, and everyone knew. Like, you know, Jim Cornette knew they weren't ready. We would say week after week, they're not ready. They brought them up anyway.
Nobody listened.
I know.
And in the
it's
end,
kinda like
it's...
TNA.
We all know what happened, but he'll be on the show tomorrow, so we'll talk about him going to the mall with the Heartbreakers, one of the great angles in the history of the old Ohio Valley, which was so much fun. But that'll be tomorrow. We'll be back on Wednesday night, and we'll talk to you then.